866, the Press Watch t-shirt, 877-500-5266. Call right now. And you've been listening via our great big red and white Eiffel Tower on the West Hill on 90.7 FM for many a mile and other frequencies in Cascadia, and also via the World Wide Web at kboo.fm, and in that manner to all the ships at sea.
KB would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by The Higher Taste, a local food company making ready-to-eat, vegan, and vegetarian fare since 1987. Their products are available at most local grocery stores. A menu and locator can be found at thehighertaste.com. Lunch was provided by Frank's Noodle House, with two locations in Northeast Portland and Beaverton. Specializing in hand-pulled noodles, Frank's Noodle House serves a wide variety of Chinese noodles. Open Monday to Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Dinner was provided by Bombay Chot House, located in downtown Portland at 804 Southwest 12th Avenue. Bombay Chot House, also known as Indian Chot House, is one of Portland's destinations for authentic Indian food. Open every day but Sunday, from breakfast to dinner. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm/give right now.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next on the Heather McCoy Show, Heather talks to Johann Hari, author of Lost Connection, Uncovering the Real Causes of Depression and the Unexpected Solutions. At 11, it's a special between the covers for the Spring Drive. KBOO's own youth collective will be interviewing Alex Gino, author of You Don't Know Everything. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures pays tribute to the 10th anniversary of April being Portland Comic Book Month. Host Koch looks at events, new releases, and participatory activities through the month with guests Matt Boris and Liz Yerby. As you may have noticed, KBOO is in the fourth day of our spring membership drive. If you'd like to become a member or increase your contribution, you can call us at 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
Coming this Friday during KBOO's Spring Membership Drive, it's News and Public Affairs Day. From 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.,
KBOO will be highlighting the voices of our news and public affairs volunteers. This spring's News and Public Affairs Day will be featuring programs that take a critical look at data mining
and the non-great side of social media and how our lives are increasingly affected by the internet.
That's News and Public Affairs Day this Friday, April 12th from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Heather McCoy Show.
Welcome to the Heather McCoy Show. Joining me for the full hour is best-selling author Johann Hari. His new book is called Lost Connections, Uncovering the Real Causes of Depression and the Unexpected Solutions. The book has gotten praise from Hillary Clinton, Tucker Carlson, Russell Brand, and Glenn Greenwald, all of whom don't agree on things very often. Johann will be appearing downtown in Powell's, at Powell's Bookstore, for an in-store appearance on Friday. I believe that starts at 7:30. Welcome to the show, Johann.
I'm so happy to be with you, Heather. And please don't judge me by Tucker Carlson.
Yeah. As you state in your book, one in five adults in the U.S. are taking at least one antidepressant. You were one of them for a number of years, but not everyone decides to write a book like this. What was your first inkling that this was something that you wanted to write about?
Yeah, if everyone taking antidepressants wrote a book about it, we'd have a massive flood of the book market. There were these two mysteries that were really hanging over me for the longest time. And to be honest, I was quite frightened to look into them. The first mystery is, I'm 40 years old, and every year that I've been alive, depression and anxiety have increased here in the United States and across the Western world. And I wanted to understand why. Why is this happening to us? Why are so many people around us finding it harder and harder to get through the day? And this is, you know, manifesting in all sorts of ways. We've just seen on the day that you and I are speaking, the Center for Disease Control has released figures that show suicide is at the highest level since records began, and that doesn't even include the opioid crisis, which is itself a response to despair. So firstly, it was what's happening to us. And I wanted to understand that, as you allude to, for a very personal reason. You know, when I was a teenager, I remember going to my doctor and saying that I had a feeling like pain was leaking out of me, and I couldn't control it, I couldn't regulate it, I didn't understand why it was happening. And my doctor told me a story that I now realize was really oversimplified. Not that it had no truth, but it was really oversimplified. My doctor said, we know why people feel this way. There's a chemical called serotonin in people's brains, you know, makes them feel good. Some people are naturally lacking it or have a chemical imbalance. You're clearly one of them. All we need to do is give you these drugs, you're going to be fine. So they get. I was given an antidepressant called Paxil, and a really significant boost. And then some months later, this feeling of pain started to come back. So I went back to my doctor. He said, obviously, didn't go high enough dose. I was given a higher dose. Again, I felt better. Again, this feeling of pain came back, and I was really in this cycle of taking the maximum possible dose until I was taking the maximum possible dose for 13 years, at the end of which I was still depressed. And I wanted to understand what's going on here. And I was beginning to think, well, if it was just a problem in people's brains, why would it be rising in so many people around me? And I'm doing everything I'm being told to by the culture around me, by the story we tell about depression, and yet I still feel awful. What am I meant to do? So for my book, Lost Connections, I ended up going on this really big journey. I ended up traveling over 40,000 miles. I wanted to sit with the leading experts in the world about what causes depression and anxiety and what solves them. And just people with really different perspectives, from an Amish village in Indiana, because the Amish have very low levels of depression, to a city in Brazil that banned advertising to see if that would help people, to a lab in Baltimore that gave people psychedelics to see if that would help. And I learned loads of things, but the core of what I learned is there's scientific evidence for 9 causes of depression and anxiety. 2 of them are indeed in our biology. We can talk about that if you like, but
yeah,
most of them are not in our biology. Most of them are factors in the way we're living that helps us to understand why it's going up. And once you understand that, that opens up a whole different way of dealing with these problems that should be offered alongside the option of chemical antidepressants.
Why does pain seem to always have a narrative? It's not so much the narrative the doctor tells you is that your serotonin levels are different, but then there's this backstory that you tell yourself.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it. We need, when you're in terrible pain, particularly a really acute depression, it feels like it has no causes, right? It feels like it's just this thing out of the blue. But actually, if you look at the causes of depression and anxiety that I learned about from the leading scientists in the world, there's things that connect a lot of them, not all of them. For example, everyone listening to your show knows they have natural physical needs, obviously, right? You need food, you need water, you need shelter, you need clean air. If I took those things away from you, you'd be in real trouble real fast. But there's equally strong evidence that all human beings have natural psychological needs. You need to feel you belong. You need to feel your life has meaning and purpose. You need to feel that people see you and value you. You need to feel you've got a future that makes sense. And this culture we've built is good at lots of things. I'm glad to be alive today. I had to go to the dentist the other day. I'm glad to be alive in 2019. But we've been getting less and less good at meeting these deep underlying psychological needs. And this is one of the key reasons why we're feeling this way. There are real biological factors that contribute to depression and anxiety. Your genes can make you more sensitive to these problems, just like some people like me find it easier to put on weight and some people who I hate find it really hard to put on weight. There are also real brain changes that happen when you become depressed that make it harder to get out. But most of the things that are going on in driving depression and anxiety for most people are not that. They're these factors related to the way we live.
So if we role play for a second and I'm the patient and you're the doctor and then I come to you and I say I'm depressed, what will the typical interaction be within the Western medicine as it's currently practiced?
Well, I want to stress before I answer that there are lots of doctors who are dissatisfied with this model and want to do better. And it's not the fault of the individual doctors, but on average, you'll get 6 minutes with your doctor. Your doctor will have the doctor will have very little time to ask you any questions. And almost all, if you go in being depressed, you'll be offered a chemical antidepressant as the first and primary response. Now, I'm not against chemical antidepressants. They have some positive role to play. But if somebody really helped me to think about this differently, I can talk more about the science, about what antidepressants actually do if you want, and the evidence they have a real effect, but it's actually for most people quite small, and most people taking chemical antidepressants, unfortunately, the long-term research shows, do become depressed again. But if somebody really transformed how I thought about this, I went to go and see this South African psychiatrist called Derek Summerfield, who happened to be in Cambodia in 2001 when they introduced for the first time chemical antidepressants in that country. And the local doctors, the Cambodians, had never heard of these drugs. So they were like, what are they? And he explained. And they said to him, oh, we don't need them. We already have antidepressants. And he was like, what do you mean? He thought they were going to talk about some kind of herbal remedy like St. John's wort or something. Instead, they told him a story. There was a farmer in their community who worked in the rice fields. And one day he got his leg blown off by a landmine left over from the war with the United States. So they gave him an artificial leg, and he goes back to work in the rice fields. But apparently it's super painful to work underwater when you've got an artificial leg. I'm guessing it was pretty traumatic for obvious reasons. The guy starts to cry all day, doesn't want to get out of bed. He develops classical depression. That's when the Cambodian doctor said to Dr. Summerfield, well, that's when we gave him an antidepressant. And he said, what was it? They explained that they went and sat with him. They listened to him. They realized that his pain made sense. It had causes in his life. They figured if they bought him a cow, he could become a dairy farmer. He wouldn't be in this position that was screwing him up. So they bought him a cow. Within a couple of weeks, his crying stopped. Within a month, his depression was gone. They said to Dr. Summerfield, so you see, doctor, that cow, that was an antidepressant. That's what you mean, right? Now, if he'd been raised to think about depression and anxiety the way we have, that sounds like a joke. I went to my doctor for an antidepressant, she gave me a cow. But what those Cambodian doctors knew intuitively is what the leading medical body in the world, the World Health Organization, has been trying to tell us for years. If you're depressed, if you're anxious, you're not weak, you're not crazy, you're not a machine with broken parts, you're a human being with unmet needs. And what you need is love and practical help to get those deeper needs met. So a big part of what I'm asking in my book, Lost Connections, is, okay, what's the cow for the things that are screwing us up, right?
So tell us the story behind serotonin and how it became more of a marketing tool than actual science.
So this was one of the things. There are lots of things I learned in the research for the book that were really challenging to me. And I found this really challenging. I want to preface it by saying, this doesn't mean there is no value in chemical antidepressants, and it doesn't mean people listening to this show should just stop them. I want to just explain there. It was quite shocking to discover that the story I was told by my doctor, that depression is caused by low serotonin in the brain, there's no scientific evidence for that. The leading expert at Princeton, Professor Andrew Scull, says it is, these are his words, deeply misleading and unscientific to say depression is caused by low serotonin. And one of the leading experts in Europe, Dr. David Healy, said to me, you can't even say that story has been discredited because it was never credited. And there was never a time when half of the scientists in the field thought that. So as you allude to, Heather, how do we end up getting told that story? That was the story the drug company PRs figured out would be the best way to market these drugs, right? Because it makes it sound like you've just got a deficit in your brain, so all you need is that thing that's missing in the brain to be boosted up. And we know how much these drugs work, and they do have some real effect. So depression is generally measured by something called the Hamilton scale. I've always felt really sorry for whoever Hamilton was, that we only remember him by how miserable we all are. But anyway, to give you a sense of the Hamilton scale, it goes from 1, where you would be dancing around in ecstasy, maybe on ecstasy, to 51, where you would be acutely suicidal. And to give you a sense of movement on the Hamilton scale, on average, if you improve your sleep patterns, you will gain 6 points on the Hamilton scale. And if your sleep patterns deteriorate, like when you have a baby, on average, you'll move 6 points the other way. So the leading expert at Harvard Medical School looked at all the data about chemical antidepressants, how far do they move is on the Hamilton scale. What he found is, on average, over time, chemical antidepressants move people 1.8 points on the Hamilton scale. So it's less than a third of improving your sleep patterns. It's important to say that's an average. So I initially got more. Over time, I got less. Also important to say 1.8 points ain't nothing, right? If you're acutely suicidal, that might be the thing that gets you down off the bridge. But it also tells us something else that we've just got to be honest about. For most of us, it's giving a bit of relief. It's not solving the problem. We can see that because for the last 40 years, every year we've increased chemical antidepressant prescriptions, and every year depression, anxiety, and suicide have continued to go up. Now, it's not because of the antidepressants. They are taking the edge off. But there's something missing in that story. What's missing in that story is what's actually causing depression and anxiety. So can I give you a concrete example? Because this can sound a bit kind of overwhelming or fancy.
Yeah, go for it.
We are the loneliest society there has ever been. There's a study that asks Americans, how many close friends do you have who you could turn to in a crisis? And when they started doing it years ago, the most common answer was 5. Today, the most common answer is none.
Wow, that is some sobering information. You are hearing that information on The Heather McCoy Show. That is one of KBOO's newest public affairs offerings. And I'm Ani. I'm here with Teresa. And we are excited to be, in fact, talking about The Heather McCoy Show and asking for your support. Right now, please call 877-500-5266. You are listening to Heather's interview with Johan Hari, who is a best-selling author writing about mental health and depression. And the idea that social isolation and the conditions of our culture, of our societies, are actually adding into the depression, and it's more than can be fixed with a pill. This is information that is so necessary. It is information that is vital. It is about our culture, and we need to make some deep, deep changes. Right now, you can be a part of those deep changes by calling 877-500-5266, because, in fact, we are community radio. And when you join in, it is, in fact, an antidote to that isolationism. It is an antidote to, I guess isolation is actually the word I'm looking for. It is an antidote to feeling sort of alone and powerless, because you know that when you are working with community and you are a part of community, you are connected to the greater whole. So call that number, 877-500-5266. Know that you are doing your part to connect back in, to change the world, to make it a better place. And with your $60 contribution, you can get a copy of Johan Hari's book, Lost Connections. We have only 3 copies of that book, so please call right now. And also, there is an anonymous, very generous donor, contributor, supporter of KBOO, who is putting up a $250 match. So for this hour, everything that you contribute will be doubled. All of your contributions coming in during this hour will be doubled up to $250, which will help us raise that eventual goal of $700 for this hour. Please do call right now with your $60 contribution. Get a copy of Johan Hari's Lost Connections book. Know that you were doing your part to support community radio, and in fact, your money is counting doubly. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
Thanks, Ani. I'm Teresa. Say, do we have any names of people who've called in so far?
Well, now that you mention it, yes. I want to thank Rebecca and David in Woodland, Washington. Goodness, that's loud.
You knew I was just
Goodness.
Waiting.
But thank you, Rebecca and David. Thank you. Susan, thank you so much in Northeast Portland. A renewing member who started becoming a sustainer this morning. Thank you so much. I want to thank Ellen from Corbett, who is a new member. Thank you so much, Ellen. She loves the variety of the program hosts and says that KBOO is her community resource. That is a wonderful thing. Please do join Ellen, join Rebecca and David and Susan in joining KBOO. 877-500.
877-526-8776, toll-free 500 is easy to remember, and 5266 spells KABU, 877-500-5266. Support the Heather McCoy Show and support KBOO by calling right now. Spending 3 minutes on the phone like this person is doing right now gives us a thrill. You should see us light up when these, and it ain't just the phones that light up, when it rings, 877-500-5266. This is a great time to do it. The weather's just right for joining KBOO, 877-500-5266.
Or online, KBOO.FM. Please take a moment and support community radio. Support the Heather McCoy Show. Meet this match grant this morning. It's a $250 match. Call in right now with your support. 877-500-5266.
If you're just joining us here on the Heather McCoy Show, our guest is Johan Curry. He's written a book called Lost Connections, Uncovering the Real Causes of Depression and the Unexpected Solutions. So one of the interesting things in your book as well is about, like, what are the effects of SSRIs, where it doesn't help as much as other things can, but the side effects are very real.
For some people, they are, yeah. Like 70% of men who take them, it affected my sexual functioning, and I also gained a huge amount of weight. So, again, I want to stress, for some people, the benefits outweigh the side effects, and for some people, those effects are really significant. But we just need to have a slightly more mature conversation about it. Up to now, my argument is we need to expand our idea of what an antidepressant is. Anything that reduces depression and anxiety should be regarded as an antidepressant. For some people, that will include chemicals, and they should certainly be an option on the menu. But let me give you an example of a different kind of antidepressant. So one of the heroes of my book is an amazing guy called Dr. Sam Everington. He's a doctor in East London, where I'm from, as you can tell from my weird Downton Abbey accent. And Sam's actually a doctor in a poor part of East London, just a general practitioner. And Sam was really uncomfortable because he had loads of patients coming to him with depression and anxiety. And like me, he thinks there is a role to be played by chemical antidepressants, but he could see two things. Firstly, most of the people he was giving them to did become depressed again. And most of them were depressed and anxious for perfectly understandable reasons. So let's look at loneliness. That was one thing he was very aware of. So one day, Sam decided to pioneer a different approach that's now being imitated all over the world with incredible results. A woman came to see him called Lisa Cunningham, who I got to know later. Lisa had been shut away in her home with terrible depression and anxiety for 7 years. And Sam said to Lisa, "Don't worry, I'll carry on giving you these drugs. I'm also going to prescribe something else." There was an area behind the doctor's surgery that was just a kind of scrubland, right? Empty scrubland. And Sam said to Lisa, "What I'd like you to do is come and turn out a couple of times a week. I'm going to come too because I've been quite anxious. We're going to meet with a group of other depressed and anxious people, and we'll find something to do together so we won't be lonely." The first time the group met, Lisa was literally physically sick with anxiety. But they start talking and they're like, "Okay, what can we do?" These are inner city East London people. Like me, they don't know anything about gardening. They're like, "Hey, maybe we should learn gardening." So they decide they're going to teach themselves gardening. And they start to watch YouTube. They start to read books. They start to get their fingers in the soil. They start to learn the rhythms of the seasons. There's a lot of research. The exposure to the natural world is a really powerful antidepressant. And something even more powerful starts to happen. They start to form a tribe. They start to care about each other and look after each other. If one of them doesn't show up, everyone goes looking for them. They're like, "Hey, do you need any help? But how are you getting on today?" And the way Lisa put it to me, as the garden began to bloom, we began to bloom. There was a study in Norway of a very similar program that found it was more than twice as effective as chemical antidepressants. I think for an obvious reason, right? It was dealing with some of the reasons why the people in the program felt so bad in the first place. And this is something I saw all over the world, from San Francisco to Sydney to Sao Paulo. The most effective strategies for dealing with depression and anxiety are the ones that deal with the reasons why we feel so bad in the first place. Now, I think that gardening program is an antidepressant, right? It's an extremely, according to the best research, is an extremely powerful antidepressant.
An emerging field within city planning is the connection between the built environment and public health. Cities in the U.S. are opting to add health elements to their required elements within their general plan updates. You spend time with the Amish community, as we were talking about earlier. One of them basically kind of laid out the concept of walkable communities. It was hinted at when Lauren Beachy stated that if we had cars and our church district is going to get scattered across 20 miles, end quote. Has there been studies that correlate the prevalence of suburbs, which are highly car dependent, versus the cities where I can take the MAX and actually interact with people?
Yes, you're on such an important point. So this is animals in zoos go crazy, right? Horses start obsessively swaying. Elephants will grind their tusks down to nothing, or their tusks are bloody stumps, even though their tusks are a great source of pride in the wild. Parrots will rip out their feathers. This phenomenon is called zoocosis. If you deprive animals of their natural habitat, they lose it, right? One thing that is happening with depression, I want to stress it's one thing among many, is we're having a kind of zoocosis. There's a really interesting kind of accidental study. And the state prison in Michigan has one big part of it that looks out over beautiful greenery, and one part of it that just looks out over concrete. And it was random where you ended up in the prison, right? There's a study that found the people who looked out over the concrete had much higher levels of all forms of mental illness, right? So we evolved to live, just like, you know, parrots evolved to live in a particular environment, we evolved to live in a particular environment. We have been deprived of that environment, and we know that for lots of reasons. We also know that getting people back into natural environments has a really, and that can literally just be a garden, has a really big effect. There's a big debate about why, so partly it's because of what we've just been talking about, our natural environment. One other reason is that one of the things depression is becoming trapped in your own ego and your thought. I can remember this so well, this kind of your thoughts just rattling around and feeling you get no relief from them. And one of the things that tends to happen in natural environments is that people feel a sense of awe. They feel a sense that they're small and the world is big. And this gives a lot of people, it's one of the things that's going on, it gives people a sense of relief from that being imprisoned in yourself, imprisoned in your own ego.
Dr. Terrell Harris, one of the researchers you cite often in the book, states that, quote, no organism exists without the environment. As you're pointing out in the book, doctors are taught in medical school that there's a biopsychosocial model. They've been taught that for decades. Why has that model been left out, and why is it so easy for us just to go to the pills?
Yeah, so I think it's worth explaining what that means. So pretty much everyone agrees, all the scientists agree, there's three kinds of cause for depression and anxiety. There are biological causes, like your genes, real changes that happen in your brain when you become depressed. There are psychological causes, like how you think about yourself, childhood trauma, a whole range of them. And then there are social causes. We've mentioned a few of them, things like loneliness and being cut off from the natural world. All three are real, and all three play out to some degree in all mental illness, although, of course, it varies from person to person how big each one will be, right? But what we've done, there's very broad consensus among scientists about this thing. It's called the biopsychosocial model. And yet, in practice, almost all people get offered is a biological solution, drugs, and maybe a tiny side dish of a kind of psychological solution, you know.
That's right. You are listening to Johan Hari here on KBOO Community Radio on the Heather McCoy Show. I'm Ani, and I'm here with Teresa.
Hi.
And we are asking you to support KBOO right now. 877-500-5266 is that number to call to let us know that you are there to be counted this morning as supporters of Community Radio and the Heather McCoy Show. There is a $700 goal to reach, and we can do that working together. We have a wonderful anonymous a donor who has contributed a matching grant this morning to help us meet that $700 goal. Please call right now with your contribution and help us get there. 877 877- 800-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
Is there anything Anonymous can't do?
No.
I would like to suggest that you call us right now and create or up your pledge to $25 a month so that you can get the KBOO two-sided hoodie that has the KBOO logo on it. It's a black hoodie. It's got a hood, and it zips up, and it's so great for the weather right now. You'd be wishing that you had it if you didn't. So call us, 877-500-5266. We've got your size, 877-500-5266. I'm tempted to say, no, I'll just go ahead and say, makes a great gift.
It does, actually.
I think flies into a lot. No, this is a great time to call in. We are ready for your call. The handsets are available, and when you call in, it'll give us a buzz in more than one sense, 877-500-5266. And the hoodie has been very popular, and I've been seeing them all over town since we rolled them out, a couple of years.
It's been like 4 or 5 years now, hasn't it?
It's sort of the premium
And
it's the top of the line. And so, like, if you're contributing like $10 a month, you might want to go up to $25 and get yourself the hoodie.
Absolutely. And I got to say, I have been wearing mine for the last couple of weeks. It is the pretty much perfect weight for the weather that we've been having. It's the perfect Portland spring garment. 877-500-5266 is the phone number to call when you decide to become a supporter of KBOO Community Radio. Now, what does that mean? It means that you are somebody who knows the importance of independent media. It means you are somebody who values your community and your access to information like Heather McCoy is bringing you this morning with her interview with Johan Hari, the author who is writing about depression. And this is such an important conversation. We think that all progress is great. We're making the world better every day. But in fact, so many of the ways that we are doing things right now is adding to mental health issues, is adding to a sense of hopelessness and isolation. And you are hearing this discussion in a very deep way right here this morning. Please call right now, 877-500-5266, and know that KBOO Community Radio is this voice of independent media here in the community, bringing people from the community in to create this content that is relevant to you, our community members, right? It is sort of a full circle sort of situation, and we're asking you to make sure you're doing your part by supporting it. Please call right now with your $25 a month contribution, adding up to $300 over the course of the year. Ask the phone answerer for one of the KBOO hoodies. They're gorgeous. They're great to wear. They're comfy. And they show that you are a supporter of KBOO Community Radio. Call right now, 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
877-500-5266. It's the in-depth, long-form PA public affairs that brings you here, and we're going right back to it now. 877-500-5266. You won't miss out. You can always hear the recorded discussion on KBOO.fm. And now back to the Heather McCoy Show.
That's when Tanya told Nuria something she rarely talked about. She had come to Cotty when she was 15. She'd been thrown out by her middle-class family. She'd found her way to live in a punk squat in Cotty. And not long after she arrived there, she got pregnant. They realized they had both been children with children of their own.
I remember reading a book about work. I don't remember the author, but he started the book by quoting Marx about the nature of work when your labors are not under control. To my surprise, as a younger person, I was surprised that this disconnection from work hasn't changed from around the 1800s when Marx wrote those words. And then when I was reading in 2001, when I was stuck at a bad job at a grocery store, how do you make those changes if you can't join a co-op? I mean, what changes do we collectively have to make?
I think there's a whole range of them. And the last third of my book, Lost Connections, is really looking at what are the changes we need to make. There are changes people can make as individuals, and I talk about that, and there are big social changes. So let me give you an example of a big social change that led to a really significant effect on mental health. In the 1970s, the Canadian government chose at random a town called Dauphin in Manitoba. It's about 4 hours out of Winnipeg, for people who know Canada. And they said to a huge number of people in this town, we're doing an experiment. From now on, we're going to give all of you a guaranteed income. It was the equivalent of $12,000 US a year. They said, we're not there's nothing you can do that means that we'll take this away from you, and you don't have to do anything in return for it. We just want you to have a secure life, right? And this was monitored by scientists, an amazing woman called Dr. Evelyn Forget, and just see what would happen. And loads of things happened, but to me the most interesting is there was a really significant fall in mental health problems. Mental health problems that were so severe that people had to be shut away in psychiatric hospitals fell by 9%, and in just 3 years. And this fits with something that is in many ways completely common sense, right? Half of all Americans, through no fault of their own, because of these big changes in the economy, have been unable to set aside $500 for if something goes wrong in their lives, right? I mean, think about how insecure and frightening that is. And yet what's happening, we've had a society where people have become much more financially insecure, where the middle class is collapsing, where people are being humiliated, where that causes a huge amount of distress. And then they go to their doctors, and what are they told? They're told, oh, this is just due to a chemical imbalance in your brain. As the World Health Organization tells us, we need to talk much less about chemical imbalances and much more about imbalances in the way we live, right? There are factors in the way we are living that are driving up depression and anxiety. And we can deal with those factors, right? Now, that's obviously another big change we can make, one that's been proven to work. I go through lots of other ones. But we've got to get out of this mentality, this mindset of saying that depression is just a problem in the individual and it's the job of the isolated, depressed individual to solve it. Now, there are real biological factors playing out in individual depressed people. They are real. There are things isolated individuals can do, but most of what's going on is not that, right? It's not that people in West Virginia have, by a factor of 20 times, more chemically malfunctioning brains than people in Boston, right? I mean, this is absurd, right? What is happening, and of course this can happen at any level of the economic scale, but it's concentrated more for people who are at the bottom. So we've got to look at these 9 deeper factors that I write about in Lost Connections, and then look at the scientists I met all over the world who are building solutions around this deeper understanding of what's really going on.
If you're just joining us on the Heather McCoy Show, my guest is Johan Hurry. His new book is called Lost Connections, Undiscovering the Real Causes of Depressions and the Unexpected Solutions. He's going to be at an event, 7:30, downtown Powell's Bookstore, if you want to see the in-store appearance. Related to work, due to the inequality that is pervasive in society right now, onset by something that we call neoliberal globalism, has made a major disconnection to the hope to a hopeful or secure future. Can you go into that concept further and how they're intertwined?
Yeah, I think this is really important to understand. One of the people who helped me to understand it is a guy called Professor Robert Sapolsky at Stanford, who spent years studying baboons in Kenya, right? And baboons live in the males, not the women, live in a really strict hierarchy. So let's say if there's 40 men in the group, the troop, number one knows he's above number two, number two knows he's above number three knows, and so on and so on, all the way down the chain, right? And and where you are in the hierarchy determines like what you get, what you get to eat, who you get to have sex with, all of that. And Professor Sapolsky spent years studying two things: when are baboons most stressed, and when do they despair? And turns out, when baboons get pushed to the bottom of this hierarchy, and you move around the hierarchy, often what happens when they're pushed to the bottom of the hierarchy is the baboons will just give up. They'll cover their heads, they'll put their bottoms in the air, it's a kind of way of saying, and they'll just not move. And they'll become really listless, they'll stop eating. It looks a lot like human depression, right? It's basically them saying, okay, you beat me, just leave me alone. So that was one circumstance where they were most stressed. The other circumstance when they were most stressed is when they felt their status was insecure. So even if you were number one, if you felt that other people were circling and going to take away the number one slot, then you were even more depressed than the poor suckers at the bottom, and you showed even more levels of stress and anxiety, right? Now, I think that your listeners are picking up on the obvious parallel. You know, as a society, one, all of us have more insecure statuses, right? We know about changes that happened in the economy, or most people have more insecure statuses. Also, more and more of us are feeling that we've been pushed to the bottom of the pile, right? And there's a wonderful group of parasocial scientists, a married couple called Kate Pickett and Richard Wilkinson, who've shown, you know, as a society becomes more unequal, depression and anxiety go up because more people feel that sense of humiliation and insecurity and that they've been pushed to the bottom. So again, universal basic income, which I talked about before, is one of the ways of dealing with that. But there's much bigger, your listeners know, there's much bigger political projects afoot. You can see what's happening in the Democratic primary to deal with this. But I think what we've had up to now is too apolitical an understanding of our pain, right? There are causes of this depression, anxiety that are not directly political. One of the ones I found hardest to learn about was childhood trauma. I hope we get to that. But many, and of course, the things like brain changes are not political. But a lot of these causes are political, and there's really good scientific evidence for this. And I think this should be a much bigger political issue, right?
Discuss how the residents reconnected in the city of Berlin after an elderly woman essentially put up a suicide note on her apartment window after rents were scheduled to go up.
Yeah, you know, from my book, I learned so much from so many people, scientists. But I think of all the places I went, these are the people who taught me the most. So in the summer, and these people are not scientists at all, in the summer of 2011, on a big anonymous housing project in Berlin, a Turkish-German woman called Nuria Cengiz climbed out of her wheelchair and put a sign in the window of her apartment. She lived on the ground floor, and the notice said something like, I got a letter today saying I'm going to be evicted from my apartment next Thursday, so on Wednesday night, I'm going to kill myself. And this is a big anonymous housing project, like one in many parts of the United States. It's quite a poor area. No one really knew anyone. There were only three groups of people who really lived in this area. There were recent Muslim immigrants, this woman Nuria, there were gay men, and there were punk squatters. And as you can imagine, these groups didn't get along very well, and no one really knew anyone. So, but people see this notice outside Nuria's window, and they start to knock on her door, and they're like, do you need any help? And she said, no, screw you, I don't want any help, I'm going to kill myself. But a few of the people started talking, people who'd never met, started talking outside her apartment. And one of them had an idea. There's a big thoroughfare that goes through this housing project, which is called Kotti, that goes into the center of Berlin. And one of them said, you know, if we just blocked the road for a day and we all protested and they were all annoyed that their rents were going up, everyone's rent was going up, lots of people were being evicted. We blocked the road for a day and we protest about the rents. They'll probably let Nuria stay. There might even be some pressure to keep rents down for all of us. Why don't we do it? So they decided to do it. Saturday comes, they block the road. Nuria was like, I'm going to kill myself. I may as well let them push me into the middle of the street. She sits there. They do a load of interviews. It's a little bit of a media, you know, a little bit of a media storm that day in Berlin. And then it gets to the end of the day, and the police are like, okay, you had your fun. Take it down. But the people who live at Kotti were like, well, hang on a minute. You haven't told Nuria she gets to stay. Actually, we want a rent freeze for our entire housing project. When we get that, then we'll take it down. But of course, they knew the minute they left this barricade, the police would just tear it down anyway. So one of my favorite people in Kotti, one of the punk squatters, she's called Tanya Gartner. Tanya wears tiny little miniskirts, even in Berlin winter, and she's quite hardcore. Tanya went up to her apartment, where she had a klaxon, you know, those things that make loud noises at soccer matches. She brings it down, and she's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to drop a timetable to man this barricade. 24 hours a day until we get what we want. If the police come to take it down, let off this klaxon and we'll all come down from our apartments and we'll stop them. So people start signing up to man this barricade, right? Ends up being pretty unlikely pairings. So, for example, Tanya in her tiny miniskirt was paired with Nuria, the woman who put up this note, who's a very religious Muslim wearing a full hijab. At first they sit there a lot, they're like, we've got nothing to talk about. This is so awkward. This is so awful. They look away from each other. As the nights go on, awkwardly, they start to talk. After a few weeks, they discovered they had something incredibly powerful in common. Nuria had come to Berlin when she was 16 from her village in Turkey with her two young children, and she was meant to raise enough money to send back home for her husband to join her. But after she had been in Berlin for 18 months, she got word from home that her husband had died. She told Tanya, sitting there in the cold in Kotti, something she'd never told anyone in Germany. She'd always told people that her husband had died of a heart attack. Actually, he had died of tuberculosis, which was seen as a kind of shameful disease of poverty. That's when Tanya told Nuria something she rarely talked about. She had come to Kotti when she was 15. She'd been thrown out by her middle-class family. She'd found her way to live in a punk squat in Kotti. And not long after she arrived there, she got pregnant. They realized they had both been children with children of their own in this place they didn't really understand. And directly opposite this housing project, there's a gay club called Zudblock, run by a man I love called Richard Stein, who is quite a hardcore. I mean, to give you a sense of what this gay club is like, the previous place Richard owned was called Cafe I thought you wouldn't want to have a sandwich from Cafe A. But, and when this gay club had opened, you know, this is an area with a lot of religious Muslims. As you can imagine, there was a lot of resistance. Their windows had even been smashed. When the protest began, this gay club gave all their furniture to the barricade. They started giving them free drink and food. After a while, the people at this gay club, Zudblock, were like, well, you should have all your meetings in our... in our club, we'll give you, you know, drink and food and everything.
And we'll pick up the rest of the story after we hear from...
And even the left-wingers at Kotti were like, we're not going to get these very religious Muslims to come and have meetings in a gay club, quite hardcore gay club. It's not going to happen. It did start to happen. I remember one of the Turkish-German women there, Neriman, telling me, we all realized we had to take these small steps to understand each other. After the protest had been going on for nearly a year, one day a guy arrived at the protest called Tunkai. He was in his early 50s and he'd been clearly living homeless. And when you meet Tunkai, it's clear he's got some kind of cognitive challenges, some kind of cognitive difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got an amazing energy about him. He's a lovely person, and quite quickly everyone liked him. And by this time, the barricade they had built in the middle of the street was literally a permanent structure with a roof, right? And they were like, we don't want you to be homeless. You should come and live in this thing we've built. So Tunkai came to live there, and he became a much-loved part of the protest. And after he'd been there for 9 months, one day the police came to inspect. They would do this every now and then. And Tunkai doesn't like it if people are arguing. He thought they were arguing, the police. So he went to try to hug one of the police officers, but they thought he was attacking them, so they arrested him. That was when it was discovered. Tunkai had been shut away in a psychiatric hospital, often literally in a padded cell, for 20 years. He'd escaped one day, he lived on the streets for a few months, and he found his way to Kotti. So the police took him back to this psychiatric hospital, at which point the entire Kotti protest movement turned itself into a free Tunkai movement, right? They descend on this psychiatric hospital at the other side of Berlin. And these psychiatrists are like, what is this? They've got all these very camp gay men, these women in hijabs, and these punks demanding the release of this person they've had shut away for 20 years. But I remember Uli Hartmann, one of the protesters, said to them, yeah, but you don't love him. He doesn't belong with you. We love him. He belongs with us. Many things happened at Kotti. They got Tunkai back. It took a while. He lives there still. They got a rent freeze for their entire housing project. They then launched a referendum initiative to keep rents down across the whole city, which got the largest number of written signatures in the history of the city of Berlin. But the last time I saw Nuria, she said to me, the woman who'd started it all, she said to me, you know, I'm really glad I got to stay in my apartment. That's great. I gained so much more than that. I was surrounded by these incredible people all along, and I would never have known. And then one of the other Turkish German women there, Neriman Manker, said to me, you know, when I grew up in Turkey, I grew up in a village, and I called my whole village home. And then I came to live in the Western world, and I learned that what we're meant to call home here is just our four walls. And she said then this whole protest began, and she started to call this whole place and all these people her home. And she said she realized, in some sense, in this culture, we are homeless. The Bosnian writer, Alexander Heyman, said, home is where people notice when you're not there. By that standard, a lot of us have a very small or no sense of home. And it was so clear to me in COTI, so many of these things that I had been taught about depression and anxiety by scientists. You know, I think about how distressed these people were. Nuria was about to kill herself. Tunkai was shut away in a padded cell. Loads of these people were depressed and anxious. In the main, they did not need to be drugged. They needed to be together. They needed to be seen and valued and loved and to have something meaningful to do in their lives. And I remember one time sitting with Tanya outside Ziblock, this gay club, and her saying to me, you know, when you feel like crap and you're all alone, you think there's something wrong with you. But what we did is we came out of our corner crying and we started to fight. And we realized we were surrounded by people who feel the same way. And it was so revelatory to me because, you know, I think you can tell I love these people. I think they're amazing. But in one sense, they are entirely ordinary, right? These are randomly selected people. This hunger for reconnection is just beneath the surface. We can all feel, including people who are not depressed and anxious or addicted, can feel something's not right with this culture we've built. There's lots of good things about it, to be sure. But something's not right here, right? This is why these indicators of depression, suicide, addiction, and despair are rising so much. We've built a culture that a lot of us is not meeting some of our most basic psychological needs. And the thing that will heal that is a project of reconnection. Now, that's reconnection across many different factors and many different ways.
On Christmas Day in 2016, Amy Kutkin, a blogger for the feminist website Jezebel.com, posted an article entitled, "When Can I Say I'll Be Alone Forever?" She states that she has a job she loves, a stable income, and has a healthy social life. But at the time she wrote it, she hadn't had a date in forever and also hasn't had sex in 3 years. The situation was clearly causing her depression, and her social circle was also telling her that, "Don't worry about it, you'll find somebody," which compounded her pain. This is an issue for me as well. Is this perhaps the next logical step, a sequel, if you will, for your current book, Lost Connections?
I haven't thought enough about that specific area. So there's been a decline in... One of the things has been a huge decline in teenagers having sex, which in some ways is good. It's obviously got a decline in you know, teenage pregnancies and things, but actually I think it's kind of a sad signal. And I think partly, I haven't read that article, I remember hearing about it at the time, I think part of the problem is a kind of Tinderization of the culture, right? Which is like, okay, it's your job to entertain me for 5 minutes, and if you fail that audition, you're out, right? It means very tenuous connections and the impression of lots of choice. But the choices available are all these shallow connections, right? I want to think about the relationship between the internet and depression and anxiety. So I went to the first ever internet rehab center in the world. It's in Spokane in Washington State, just outside Spokane. It's really interesting. So they get a huge range of people in this internet rehab center, but they disproportionately get young men who've become addicted to multiplayer role player games like World of Warcraft, or now it would be Fortnite, and porn, online porn. And I remember Dr. Hillary Cash, the woman who runs the Restart Washington, saying to me, you've got to ask yourself, what are these young men getting out of these games and this porn, actually? They're getting the things they used to get from the culture, but they no longer get when we think about the games. They're getting a sense that they're good at something. They're getting a sense that they can roam around. They hardly ever leave their homes. If you look at the figures for kids playing outdoors, it's extraordinary.
You are listening to the voice of Johan Hari, bestselling author on depression, mental health issues. You are listening to this interview on The Heather McCoy Show on KABU, your community radio station. I'm Ani, and I am here with Teresa this morning asking for you to dial 877 800-500-5266. And that is the number to KBOO's membership. You can, in fact, become a member of the station. You can, in fact, add your strength to the strength of other community members and fight isolation in your very own way by being a member of KBOO, independent community media. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. Please step forward right now and contribute generously to your community radio station. Online, you can get us at kboo.fm.
The Heather McCoy Show on KBOO Portland. And the author, Jonathan Hari, writes that we know that every human being has basic physical needs for food, for water, for shelter, for clean air. It turns out in the same way, all humans have basic psychological needs. We need to feel we belong. We need to feel valued. We need to feel that we're good at something. We need to feel we have a secure future. And he says there's growing evidence that our culture isn't meeting those needs. Surprise! KBOO Longform Public Affairs delves into this sort of thing. And if you're like me, you have found this discussion fascinating because it has so much truth to it. And I'd like to invite you to join KBOO and to join our effort to actually improve the society as a group, our little collective here. Actually, we, you know, aside from radio broadcasting, we kind of meet each other's needs in a lot of ways. I think a lot of us walk our talk in that way. And it's been, for me personally, it's been very satisfying to be a part of KBOO. You can be a part, you can get your feet wet, and you can take it as far as you like. You can participate in many ways, volunteering or being on the board or just contributing and being part of KBOO, because when you join at 877-500-5266, let's say by contributing $10 a month and getting a KBOO logo T-shirt, it's only $6.25 a month.
But when you give $10 a month or more, we could thank you with that T-shirt, or we could thank you with the Press Watch T-shirt. We could thank you with the Democracy Now! T-shirt.
We could go like this.
You could get a couple of tote bags. The thing is, it is your participation here at KBOO, your community radio station. Teresa could applaud you. It's true. And that is the thing. You are joining this community radio station. Your participation is what keeps us going. And you know that you are, in fact, doing something tangible to make the world a better place. And your money counts twice, right? We have a matching period this hour. We are not quite to the end of that hour yet, or to the match. So please call right now and make that contribution double right now when you call 877-500-5266. $10 a month is a bite-sized piece for most people listening right now. When you think about the importance of community connections, and Johan Hari here was making the most poignant cases of what happens to people who feel isolated, who feel like they don't belong. And I have to say, as the volunteer coordinator, I watch community members come in feeling like they might be alone from marginalized communities. They might be alone thinking the thoughts that they think and having the views that they have. And they meet other people here and they become part of this dynamic, vibrant community that your dollars support. And that is actually a wonderful thing. I see people just sort of blossoming here over and over again. And that is powerful. You yourself can get involved in a tangible way by becoming a funder for KBOO, a supporter of KBOO, and dialing 877-500-5266. You can also come in and volunteer and join the community that way as well. A lot of people do both. Please do take your moment right now to participate in KBOO Community Radio, 877-500-5266, or online, kboo.fm.
Yeah, don't have a half-life. Get radioactive by calling us at 877-500-5266. Now, 877 is toll-free. 877 is toll-free. 500 is easy to remember. And 5266 spells KBOO, so it's 877-500-5266. And I'm guesstimating that we have gotten in about 240 so far on our goals, which doubles to 480, which means that we have, 220 left to go and just a couple of minutes. And you can be the person to put us over the top by calling us at 877-500-5266. Get a hoodie, get a T-shirt, whatever you like, and we will be so glad for whatever your contribution is. Now, a lot of you are contributing $10 a month, and you might want to bump it up to $25 and get the hoodie. You know what the hoodie is because you've heard us talk about it and you've seen it online. 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. And I see that Ani is looking intently at a yellow piece of paper.
You can also contribute online at kboo.fm. I am staring intently at this yellow piece of paper.
Is that a hole? Is he burning in it?
That you... Little and Sindri, yes. You can, in fact, hear this entire interview with Johan Hari online on the KBOO archives. Check the Heather McCoy Show, March 7th. And you can hear the entire interview. It is a very powerful interview. Johan Hari has so much wisdom when it comes to what we need as beings on this planet to stay healthy and to know that we are whole. Please do call and support this information that supports us all. 877-500-5266. We're online at kboo.fm. We have just a moment left. We do have a little bit left of that matching grant to make. So please do call right now with your support. Take us over the top. Help us meet the $700 goal for this program and keep KBOO going strong. 877-500-5266.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by The Higher Taste, a local food company making ready-to-eat, vegan, and vegetarian fare since 1987. Their products are available at most local grocery stores. A menu and locator can be found at thehighertaste.com. Lunch was provided by Frank's Noodle House, with two locations in Northeast Portland and Beaverton. Specializing in hand-pulled noodles, Frank's Noodle House serves a wide variety of Chinese noodles. Open Monday to Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Dinner was provided by Bombay Chot House, located in downtown Portland at 804 Southwest 12th Avenue. Bombay Chot House, also known as Indian Chot House, is one of Portland's destinations for authentic Indian food. Open every day but Sunday, from breakfast to dinner. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm/give right now.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's a special between the covers for the spring drive. KBOO's own youth collective will be interviewing Alex Gino, author of You Don't Know Everything. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located on East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Grendel's Coffee House is open daily until 6 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550. That's 503-595-9550.
Author Alex Gino has written two young adult books, George and You Don't Know Everything, Jilly P. Virgil and Andrew of the KBOO Youth Collective interviewed Alex